reality, not illusion or delusion that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Carol Matriciana, who, of course, is a film producer. She's done a lot of great DVDs, many of which we carry here. She's written a number of books, which we think are very, very important, which we carry. But this evening, we're going to be talking about her latest DVD, Islam Rising, going into the background of the Muslim faith. And, of course, unfortunately, there is more and more of the radical form of the Muslim religion that is surfacing throughout the world. It was really very, very latent. Certainly, there is very little of this radical form of the Muslim faith, so-called jihad religion, until recent years. It existed in Saudi Arabia as far as the Wahhabi religion. It existed in Egypt with the Muslim Brotherhood, but this was a very, very small number of people involved. However, in recent years, the Muslim, a radical form of Muslim faith, has spread and is really, of course, one of the dominant forces in Turkey, in Egypt, in Pakistan, and tragically, of course, all throughout the Muslim world. And this is a growing movement, and I'm going to let Carol tell you what the Muslim faith, which the resurgence of the radical form of Islam, the jihad, really involves. Hi, Carol. How are you doing tonight?
Good evening, Dr. Stan. How wonderful it is to be on your show again. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, you just pick up the story and tell us why you went ahead and produced this DVD, Islam Rising, and what you found as you began to analyze the Muslim faith.
Dr. Stan, if you remember, about 5 years ago, I made a movie called The New Barbarians, Training Children to Kill, where it was hundreds of hours of footage taken off Arab TV that showed young children being indoctrinated from the age of 2 years old, being indoctrinated in schools, on the playground with entertainment, TV, children's programming, and being taught to hate the Jews and start having a real spirit of hatred and anger. And ultimately, we saw footage of these children being trained, 10,000 a year, being trained in terrorist camps at the age of 10 or younger, being taught how to kill, how to slit the throats of the infidels, how to load guns, how to strap themselves with, detonate themselves, if you will, as human bombs. And so we put this film together, and in it explained the history of Israel, the history of Palestine, what this sort of war that very few people understand, the issues of Israel and what the Muslims are yelling about, being so angry and hating the Jews and wanting the Jews to be moved out of Israel and for no Jew to live there. So we took the opportunity through this to not only teach what it was about, not only teach what Israel, the history of Israel, but also to show that this kind of radical training is happening in America with terrorist camps here in America, teaching children, Muslim American children, children that have been raised in America, how to kill, how to hate Jews here in this community. Well, that ultimately led me to see that there is a new type of Islam rising in America. And so we made this four-part series, Islam Rising, A Call to One World Ummah, to basically help Americans understand what is Islam, particularly after 9/11.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with Carol Matriciana. Go right ahead, Carol.
Well, after 9/11, I mean, when we saw this, the tragedy of Muslims, 19 Muslims going into the World Trade Towers, the Twin Towers, and over 3,000 Americans, innocent victims, killed, it was very interesting that 30 to 40,000 American people converted to Islam because the Muslim community did what is called dawah, that is missionizing or giving a sort of Islam apologetics, if you will, evangelizing Americans to understand that this is really a religion of peace, it wasn't the way it appeared. And, you know, I thought that was very shocking that so many thousands converted after this absolutely horrible tragedy where, you know, it was very blatant that the teachings of the Quran were behind the 19 kids that went into the Twin Towers. And many people say, oh, well, they're extremists and this isn't what Islam is all about. Well, actually, this is what Islam is about. The word Islam simply means submission, submission to God. And a Muslim is one who follows these laws and practices of Islam. Islam is an Arabic word meaning peace. Salam is usually the way I heard it growing up in India, because I was born and raised in India with Muslims around me. My friends were Hindus and Muslims. And when this acknowledgement of salam comes, it just sort of means peace. But really, they believe that peace will be here in the world if the whole world submits to Sharia law, which is the Muslim way, the Islam way of living, how women are to dress, what one is to eat, the dietary laws, how you must perform your toiletries, the intimacies of marriage, that all of these things are part of Sharia law. It's incredible, because we translate it as a religion, but it's actually the complexity of a forceful political constitution. It's also legal laws, it's economic laws, it's definitely a military application, and then there's the social and the religious system of life is also part of it. So what I did with Islam Rising, which, by the way, Dr. Stan got the best documentary, got the 2009 award for bronze award, the ICVM award for best documentary of 2009, which was thrilling news.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Carol was just saying that her DVD, Islam Rising, got a award as the best documentary of the year. And who gave that reward?
ICVM, which was an international video Christian makers, video makers, video producers. In fact, I think there were 52 entries for this year. So we were very, very pleased and very honored. But
well, it really is very, very interesting, because, of course, Carol interviewed a lot of people. I mean, some of the people we've actually interviewed before, Walid Shobat and this woman who raised in Egypt. What was her name?
Oh, Noni Darwish.
Darwish, yes.
She was raised in Egypt, you're absolutely right. And her father, actually, was killed as a shaheed, which is a martyr for jihad, because he was involved in leading covert attacks on Israel. And he was a high-ranking Egyptian military officer that was stationed with his family in Gaza. So Noni Darwish was born in Cairo and spent her childhood in Egypt and Gaza. And then, of course, she emigrated to America in about 1978. But she is an incredible expert, because she's seen it from growing up in the schools. And she said that there was never any idea of peace. I mean, she, as they were growing up, these Egyptian Muslims, she was raised a Muslim, she said there was never any talk about peace. It was a spirit of total hatred towards the Jews and the infidels and anybody that didn't convert to Islam. And in fact, in the movie, her particular area of expertise was to show the treatment of women, and that a woman is abused. In fact, in the Muslim faith, a Muslim man can marry a child as young as 1 year old and have sexual intimacy with this child. Of course, the Muhammad, the prophet and leader of Islam, consummated his marriage with a 9 year old girl, Aisha, and that is the age appropriately, if one follows the Quran. But a dowry is given to the family in exchange for this young girl, and she becomes a slave. And within Islam, a man is permitted to have four wives, in fact, have polygamous relationships, and that's one of the forms of jihad that is taking place in America, that these young men come here to marry American women and seed them. The jihad of seeding, the jihad of polygamy, and seeding means basically, they call it seeding in the womb, but that they grow the population of Muslims by seeding the womb to have children. And as they grow the numbers and the population in America, then the greater number that they have here is then able to, as they put it, as the population grows, then the support, if you will, of the population has to be more and more Muslim. So, for instance, in London, where there is a huge Muslim community, the British police have to have Muslim police to be able to look after the numbers of Muslims that live in London. And London is known as Londistan, like Pakistan, Afghanistan, all these stans, which of course is a Islam term, a Muslim term. And as the population grows, then they feel that they need more representatives. So here in America, we've already got, as I showed in the film Islam Rising, that we've got people, we've got a congressman so far, a Muslim congressman who put his hand on the Quran, and Wally Shabbat in our movie Islam Rising says that when an American congressman puts his hand on the Quran, the message that's giving to Muslims in America is we have won. And then we've got a president who's extremely sympathetic towards Islam, who was raised as a Muslim. His father's faith was Islam, and his middle name, of course, is Hussein. And Muslims abroad and here know very well that they have got a Muslim sympathizer in the White House, and that puts tremendous pressure on our political arena to be more supportive of Islam. And I don't think people understand in America that their agenda, Dr. Stan, is to, perpetual jihad is commanded until all the world is under Sharia law, which is under the idea of the Muslim God Allah, who is not the same God as Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in the Bible, although they say it is. It is not. Muhammad very clearly understood this to be the moon god, which is why on top of every mosque all over the world you've got the crescent moon at the top of mosques, to show that this is allegiance worship given to the moon god. So all the world must come under Sharia law, submit to the law of Allah as it is said, as it is taught, as it was given in a revelation through the angel Gabriel to Muhammad, written in the Quran, written in the Hadith, and these are the laws that these people must come under, which is the meaning of Islam. Surrender.
I think it's very interesting that in Great Britain today, in England, why they are actually having the Muslims under Sharia law. In other words, they will have different courts. There, of course, they will be judged under Sharia law, not under British law. And, of course, people are saying, well, you know, if you want to live under Sharia law, why don't you go back, you know, to a Muslim country? But, unfortunately, there are very powerful forces in Great Britain today who want to destroy the Judeo-Christian heritage of that nation. And, actually, in England today, they are moving towards Sharia courts and Sharia law in the society. And there are even calls to do that in the United States, in areas where there's a large Muslim contingent. After all, why should they have to have their or live under the American law, which is based upon the Judeo-Christian concepts of the Bible? When they're Muslims, why shouldn't they be able to live under Sharia law? And of course, unfortunately, what they have done is intentionally create a situation to divide America so that you can have one group played against another. But the most incredible thing is that we're actually allowing the imams to go into the prisons, and not simply to introduce the idea of the Muslim faith, but to recruit into this radical form of Islam. Why in heaven's name would we be opening our prisons so that the Saudi Arabians can actually bring in their radical Islam, their radical imams to recruit into this radical form of religious belief? Not only that, but they're building mosques all across America. Saudi Arabia is providing the radical Islams, they're providing the money. And there is an organized effort to use this to begin very slowly and gradually to change America from a Christian nation into a Muslim nation. And a lot of people say that's crazy talk. And yet this really is happening, isn't it, Carol?
Well, I couldn't believe just recently, just 2 weeks ago, Dr. Stan, there were nearly 300 people packed into the Hilton Hotel in Chicago. And here in the United States, they want to replace the Constitution with the Quran. They met in Chicago, and this is the Hizb ut-Tahrir organization, and there they were. It's recorded, and there's this one speaker identified as an imam, as a teacher, and he said, one of the audience members asked, would you get rid of the Constitution for Sharia? And he said, yes, over the world, yes. The Sharia must be all over the world in order to bring the world peace, as they call it. But it's basically submission. It's not peace, it's submission to Allah.
And, of course, our own president talking about, how when he lived, of course, in a Muslim country, the sweet sound of the call to prayer. Well, I bet in Muslim countries, and he heard the sweet sound of waking up at 4 o'clock in the morning, and, it's not a sweet sound to me, and I think that most Americans would be offended. And yet our president talked about how this wonderful, sweet sound, what was his exact wording?
Well, the wording was that the sweetest sound was the call to prayer. Well, of course, any Muslim understands exactly what the call to prayer is. It's what the imam calls out in the minaret five times a day. And in Dearborn, Michigan, where we have an American town, but Dearborn, Michigan has the largest mosque in America, and it is permitted to transport, if you will, the call of prayer over the loudspeakers. And it is to be louder than church bells. The liturgy of church bells may not be louder than the sound of call to, than the sound of a call to prayer. So, here we have, again, because people, I think in America, they think that the mosque is the same as our church, a Christian church, but it's not. The mosque and Islamic centers are an integral part of American Muslim life, and they're places of refuge where the Muslims are invited to experience the Islamic community. And in Dearborn, as I said, this is one of the few places where you can actually hear the call to prayer publicly over a loudspeaker. And it's a Shia mosque. It's the largest mosque in the United States.
And I think it's so important for people to understand that the Muslim faith has to do with government, it has to do with law, it has to do with what you eat, it has to do with how you work, it has to do with what you wear. It dictates every bit of your life. If there's no separation of church and state, the religion and the state are one. And, of course, the punishment for breaking of Sharia law is a horrible take off your hand, take off your foot, take off your head. This is real, goes on throughout the world today.
Well, that's because it's all about submission.
Go right ahead, Carol.
Well, we were talking about Dearborn, Michigan. Do you know that there's almost a third of the population in Dearborn it's a single.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a 4-tape or a 4-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that'll protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances? Even things which can cause sickness or disease. If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verky water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verky water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Dawa, which is this sort of evangelization, if you will, or missionizing. It's a missionary arm of Islam. It's their duty to conquer. And there's two ways to conquer. It's done through the sword, as we've seen in history since Muhammad was born in 570 A.D., since his politics came into power, we see that the way he did it was with the sword. But there is another type of jihad, which is the jihad of dawah, which is this sort of missionizing. And that's the way that they're doing it here in America, by going into prisons, telling the prisoners that they will, if the prisoner converts, then they will look after his family on the outside. They are particularly targeting American Indians and Hispanics and blacks. But particularly one of the areas is American Indians, And then they go to the family on the outside and they say that your husband or children or whoever have converted within the prison and we're going to look after you. So that's one way. Of course, it's through politics, as we see that they've got their people placed in political areas. We see that they're doing it through the educational system in schools, even wanting to teach through social studies and cultural studies, you know, what Islam is all about. So they're going into the educational system, of course, in universities. And so that's one of the programs that we show the Dawah, the duty to conquer. And one of the other programs, and each of the programs is about 40 minutes or so, the other one explains the ideology of Islam, the religion of Islam, if you will. What is Sharia law and what is jihad? Most people think that jihad is that the horrible behavior, the extremist behavior that we saw at the Twin Towers. But there are actually eight different kinds of jihad. And there's the jihad of deception, the jihad of words, the jihad of lying, the jihad of the sword, which is where you may cut off the hands and feet of the infidels. There's the jihad of Sharia law, which is what they want to push here in America. There's the jihad of slavery, where it's the only religion in the world where Muslims engage in actually having the only place in the world today where slavery is still practiced is within Muslim communities, for instance, in Sudan and other places where Muslims are allowed to enslave and own and sell human beings.
And of course, they do that in Saudi Arabia, too, with the full consent of our government. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY. If you're out there and you have a question or comment for our guest, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. And I will tell you, this is an excellent DVD. It's four segments, each one about 40 minutes long. You can watch it and Sydney, we actually watched it all in one evening. It was so fascinating. But it will give you every aspect of what you need to know about the threat of the Muslim religion, which is intent upon destroying Christianity. What is so amazing about this is it has the full support of the American government. In fact, certainly in Iraq, where we were instrumental in setting up the new government there before, of course, under Saddam Hussein, who was a wicked, wicked man, but at least they had a secular government, they had freedom of religion. However, when we established the new government over there, it was a government under Sharia law, and the government, the constitution of the new government in Iraq requires Sharia law. Why would our government let or allow or encourage the establishment of a country with Sharia law under the auspices of the American occupation? Certainly, we could have done whatever we wanted to, and we put in Sharia law. If the government would put in Sharia law there, would they want to put in Sharia law perhaps in Michigan or maybe in San Francisco? People don't understand that there really are powerful spiritual forces working behind the scenes, that the religion of the Muslim faith, and if you really study this and if you read the Quran, you'll find out that Muhammad feared he was demonically possessed. We actually have a four-tape set called Islam, the Religion of Doom, where we simply give all the references that are in the Quran to the demonic roots of this. Now, certainly there's some people who have actually written about this who are Muslims. In fact, there was a gentleman who did this, and he had to go into hiding. You remember some years ago with this Muslim author who had to go into hiding because they were going to kill him. Why? Because he wrote something called the Satanic Verse.
From the mountain.
this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest is Carol Matriciana. So, Carol, you go right ahead.
Well, there were a couple of things that you said, Dr. Stan, about Sharia law, and I'm not sure if everybody understands that basically Sharia law takes away freedoms. It denies basic freedom. That's what Islam is, a religion of force. It's always been a force. It's under the... created at thousands and thousands and thousands of deaths over the last 1,400 years. But the way that they're coming into America is the jihad of dawah, or quiet evangelism, where you've got to train, you know, with subterfuge and deceit as to what Islam is. But Sharia law denies basic freedoms. And, you know, they pretend that the Quran is a pacifist document, and that Islam has a consistent track record of peace and tolerance, but it's not true, because if you, all you have to do is look at the history of it, and one of the segments in our movie, Islam Rising, is on the history of the sword of terrorism, taking us through, you know, from the beginning when Muhammad first started his religion, and right through to where it is today. In particular, I mean, it's, you know, they say that they're fighting the Jews and the Christians and the infidels, but an infidel can be anybody who will not submit to Allah and his particular rule. And they fight amongst Muslims. I mean, there's the Islam is divided into the world. They divide the world into Dara al-Islam, which means the house of peace, or Dar al-Harb, which is the house of war. And they contend that peace, which is what Allah commands, has to be over the whole world, and that you are permitted to strike terror into the hearts of the infidels and strike off their heads. Slay the idolaters wherever you find them.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Carol Matriciana, and our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And it was really very interesting. Carol was on yesterday on our afternoon program, and it was amazing the emotional response we got from many people who called in, who point out that there are many wonderful Muslims in this country. There are people with very, very strict moral habits, you know, and certainly they do not have a lot of adultery or playing around. They don't use drugs. They don't smoke. They're hardworking people. And that is really very true. But what people don't understand is that the average Muslim has nothing to do with the Muslim faith. In fact, the Muslims, most of the Muslims who've come to the United States are not good Muslims. They came to the United States because they didn't want to live under Sharia law. They didn't want to live under the tyranny that exists in the Muslim nations, similar to the tyranny that we have now imposed in Iraq. The occupying army has set up a state under Sharia law. And, of course, this is why the Christians have fled from Iraq. At one time, the population of Iraq was 10% Christian. The Christians have left there. Why? Because we have installed a Sharia state, and you have to ask yourself, why would the United States install the Sharia religion as the official religion and governmental body that controls this new state that we have established supposedly in the name of democracy? Well, there are a lot of questions, and I would simply point out there are a lot of good people, that moral people, who are Muslims living in America because they don't want to live in a Muslim country, and I don't think that we do either. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. And Carol, would you like to get your web page out and information on how people can reach you and your ministry?
Yes, thank you, Dr. Stan. They can actually, our website is www.caryl, that's Caryl Production, CARYLTV.com. Seven letters, CARYLTV, like television.com. And there they can look at Islam Rising and the movie we were talking about before, The New Barbarians, Training Children to Kill, and many other books and very good products on different topics, but at this moment, the topic that we are talking about is Islam Rising, A Call to One World Ummah. And one of the segments, one of the 40-minute programs in this series is about the mosque and its many faces and the purpose of the mosque. And when you said, Dr. Stan, that, you know, many people are good and moderate and come here, well, in the mosques, they're taught the Quran. And the Quran is an extremely cruel, it's an amazing book of cruelties where one is taught in the Quran to cut off the heads of, to befriend Jews or Christians and to mutilate in anybody that resists Islam. I mean, here is a book that actually says in the hadith, and the hadith is the record of the words and deeds of Muhammad. It's an inspired book, second to the Quran, but it's the most important source of Islamic law, Sharia law, as we were talking about before. And it actually says that whoever changes his religion, his Islamic religion, kill him. So you see, the Muslim is not permitted to change his religion or he will be killed. So another one of the programs, we explained the ideology of this religion, this, which, by the way, Islam just simply means submission, surrender, subjugation to Allah. And Allah, as I explained earlier, is the moon god. There were about an estimated 360 gods and goddesses who were adored by all the various Arab tribes. And Muhammad felt that they all needed to submit to his powerful Quraysh tribe and the god of the Quraysh tribe that was Allah. And so under the sword, under the penalty of death, this is what they had to do. And you know, according to the Muslims, at the age of 40, Muhammad became very concerned about the state of his fellow countrymen and spent much time in meditation. And it was during the month of Ramadan, which, by the way, is a month-long fast that the Muslim must partake in from sunrise to sunset. He's not permitted to eat or drink anything, but however, at night, of course, they can make up for it. But it was during this month of Ramadan that Muhammad retreated to this cave and got visited by this, he received this revelation from the Archangel Gabriel, and that was what formed the basis of the Quran. And a lot of the Quran was influenced in part with the Jewish teachings that were around at the time and Christian teachings, because the years after Christianity, the tribes, the tradespeople would come in caravans across Saudi Arabia there, the Arabian Peninsula. And so, you know, there was a mixture of various different religions that was put into the Quran. So some people get confused because the Quran does mention certain things about Jesus, and they say, well, you know, Muslims believe in Jesus. But actually, the Quran does say that he was born of a virgin, that yes, Jesus performed miracles, yes, he healed the blind and lepers and raised people from the dead. It explains that he had disciples, but interestingly, Dr. Stan, it gives Jesus many titles, including the servant of God, a prophet and apostle of God, the word of God, the spirit of God, but never, never is he called the Son of God. The Quran clearly states that he is not God in the flesh, and that he is not the Son of God, and he did not die on the cross. In fact, the Quran denies the possibility of an atoning death. And it says three times in the Quran that on judgment day, none can bear the sins of another. So this is not the same God, even though they try to tell people that, yes, they believe in Jesus, it is not the same God as the God of the Bible. And certainly one just has to read many parts of the Quran that says, you know, kill the Jews, kill your enemies, and this sort of behavior is not elevated in the Bible, which tells us that we cannot murder. So there's huge religious discrepancies, there's legal discrepancies, and while they assume that many Christians here in America, they assume that the Western culture, because there's pornography and alcohol consumption and liberal lifestyle, a lack of religious practice in America, that this represents Christianity. And that's not truthful at all. I mean, you know, there are secular people that live in America just as there are secular Muslims. So, but the behavior of a Muslim is the Quran tells them to kill and maim and not befriend certain people, whereas that is not the message in the Christian Bible. So when you get a young Muslim boy that straps himself with genocide...
with explosives.
Sorry?
He straps himself with explosives.
With explosives in order to be a bomb and kill innocent people around him. He is doing that in accordance with the Quran. Whereas if a Christian were to do that, he can call himself a Christian, but that is not according to the Bible.
And I think what's so important, Carol, is people have to look at what the Muslim religion says and what the Christian religion says and compare the religions. Not necessarily the practice here. At one time, America was a Christian nation. There's been an organized effort to destroy the moral fabric of our society, and they've done a pretty good job of it. And the Christian church has failed to actually hold the members of the Christian church to the high standards which Christianity requires. The Muslim faith, of course, is trying to train people in this violent form of religion, which is really one of aggression and use of violence, to bring about a worldwide conversion by force. The Christian faith hopes to bring about worldwide religion by evangelism and pointing out that the religion, Christian religion, is a religion of love. The Mohammedan religion is a religion of violence. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And it's so easy to get confused with the issues rather than not being able to see them clearly. We're talking about religious philosophy, and the religious philosophy, the Muslim faith, is indeed a frightening thing. In fact, there are people over in Europe, you know, you speak out against the Muslim faith, they'll come and simply kill you. And this has happened in various countries over there. Somebody made some cartoons about Muhammad that were insulting, and they were going to kill him. Salman Rushdie wrote a book, Satanic Verse, going into the very real fact that if you read the Quran, you'll find out that many references to the fact that Muhammad was demonically possessed, and the Hadith and all of them, and we've got a wonderful 4-tape set going into the satanic background of the Muslim religion. But you talk about, it means Salman Rushdie has been living in hiding for, 10, 15 years now?
Because I think it's almost 2 decades now, Dr. Stan.
They would actually kill him. They have a contract on his life financed by the religious leaders of the Muslim nations.
Well, you see, I think what's so incredible is that you've got these Muslim apologetics saying that this is a religion of peace, and yet we just have to look at Muslim states and see that they are the most severe persecutors of Christians. They have Muslim terrorist groups. They're the most vicious hijackers, kidnappers, bombers, and assassins. I mean, you know, Islam is, because it is permitted to have this jihad of deception, as they call it, the jihad of words, where you are able to be in verbal combat and tell lies for the sake of Allah, that they are permitted to talk out of two sides of their mouth, just as Muhammad did in the Quran. So when you look at a faith where their teacher is so violent, their teacher is such a liar, their teacher is demonically possessed, and you just have to look at the history of these people to realize that this is not a religion of peace. In the country that I was born and raised in, Dr. Stan, in India, one of the most brutal massacres, it's unparalleled in history. It's bigger in sheer numbers than the Holocaust, where 7 million Jews were killed during the Second World War. But in India, there were 70 million Hindus that were killed when the Muslims invaded India. 70 million people, not because they were Jews, not because they were Christians, just because they were Hindus. And their temples were taken over, they were pillaged, they were killed, men killed, women taken, raped, and children sold into slavery. I mean, this is the pattern of this religion that calls itself the religion of peace, that is here in America, that is growing in every state. There is a mosque. There are cell groups in every state. It is growing in a different way. It's not growing under the sword here in America, but it's got another type of jihad, the jihad to missionize, the jihad of dawah, their duty to conquer in order to bring about world Sharia, to bring the world under Sharia law, and to bring America under Sharia law.
And it's amazing the lengths that they will go to suppress this information. We did a series of programs with a fellow named Craig Wynn. He was a multimillionaire who had actually gone over and spent a lot of time talking to the Muslims, went into the Palestinian area, met the Palestinian terrorists, and he wrote a book called Tea with Terrorists, and then he wrote another book called The Prophet of Doom, going into the fact that Muhammad was demonically possessed. Well, of course, it's very interesting. I was just looking at Amazon. You can buy a copy of his book. The cheapest one is $47. And of course, you can buy a new copy for about $150. Somebody has obviously gone there and bought up all the books so that they're not available. Well, fortunately, we have the interviews with Craig, taped or CD interviews as well, where you can actually go in the background and find out where specifically in the Quran, the Hadith, and the other Muslim holy books, it talks about Muhammad being demonically possessed, but they're doing everything they can to censor this in the United States. And also the people who really work behind the scenes here, what I call the Brotherhood of Darkness, is doing everything they can to convince us that we all worship the same God. And how many times did George Bush say that? Well, George Bush may represent the God of the Muslim faith, but I certainly don't. And I don't think that any Christian who understands what we're talking about would say that we all worship the same God. And yet, George Bush repeatedly said that, and recently, not too long ago, when President Barack Hussein Obama was giving an interview, he talked about my Muslim faith, and one of his assistants jabbed him and said, no, Christian faith. He said, oh yes, my Christian faith. What an unfortunate slip.
I know. He is so... the deception of Obama is amazing. I mean, he is the most sympathetic sympathizer of Islam. But, you know, I don't know if you remember, Dr. Stan, just a week or so ago, there was an Islamic school that has been given permission to expand itself here in Fairfax County in Virginia. Here we have... these Saudi Arabian, the Wahhabi money that has come in, that is, and Wahhabism, of course, is the purest, most fundamental, reformed Islam that funds every American university with an Islamic chair in it. And here we've got an Islamic academy that asked for zoning exemption, and it's expanded. It's been permitted to expand its 34-acre campus to accommodate 200 additional students in Virginia. So here we have a school that the curriculum is part of Sharia law, and
we live in a world, we live in a fallen world, Carol. We can't let it get us down. We know, of course, we have our Lord, and we have to look to Him for our protection and for our provision. Our guest has been Carol Matriciani. The DVD, excellent. It's called Islam Rising, and we'll tell you a little later how to get it. We carry it. We encourage you to get it. We encourage you to learn about the Muslim faith. Carol, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Okay, Dr. Stan.
I will say one thing. We did not get the emotional response on this program we got on the other one. I've never heard, people felt.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your 2-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
In these times of falling values, high unemployment, loss of income, and with hyperinflation on its way, we have created a 1-ounce silver coin with a cross and the words of John 3:16 on one side and the American eagle on the other. These coins are mural finished, 0.999 silver. Each of these beautiful coins will always have an earthly store of value, plus the cross with John 3:16 as an eternal value. Go to www.john316coin.com and call 1-877-316-COIN while supplies last. Order these beautiful 1-ounce John 3:16 American Eagle coins today by going to john316coin.com and calling 1-877-316-COIN.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Going into what they're doing to the minds of these small children, they're training about 10,000 of these children every year to be suicide bombers and to hate Jews and to hate infidels, and that's you and me. And they are the invisible army that's there ready to strike when the word is given. We think that these two DVDs are very important, Islam Rising and The New Barbarians, both of which are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. We carry William Federer's excellent book, What Every American Should Know About the Koran. What Every American Should Know About the Koran. We actually have a 4-tape set, Islam Religion of Doom. That's Islam Religion of Doom, based upon my interviews with Craig Wynn, who wrote the book of the Islam, the prophet of doom. Prophet of doom, I was just pointing out how you can buy a new copy of the book now for $147. I think we used to get something like $12 or $14 for it. But somebody's gone around and bought up all these books. I wonder who could have done that. A very important DVD is something that was actively suppressed here in America. It was called Jihad in America. It was actually produced with the help of the FBI. It was released in 1994. It was all about the Islamic terrorist training camps here in America. It was about the speeches given by members of Al-Qaeda in 1988, where the leader of Al-Qaeda was speaking in Oklahoma City and Oklahoma, advocating, you know, cutting off the legs and hands and feet of the Americans and pursuing jihad here in America. And all of these pictures were actually taken by the FBI, which was monitoring this whole Islamic movement. It goes into the background of the bombing of the first bombing of the World Trade Center. And all of this was known. The government was following all of these people. They knew everything going on, and they didn't try to stop it. And when the DVD was completed, and it actually contains interviews with members of the FBI, why, it was totally suppressed. It was shown only once in America. Orders were put out. This was not to be seen again. It was not available until after the September 11th, 2001 attack. Why? Because our government was covering up for this radical Islamic movement, training here at training camps in the United States. This is still going on today. Nothing is that appears to be. This DVD, very important, very professionally done, Jihad in America. And again, the book entitled What Every American Needs to Know About the Quran, the DVDs, Islam Rising and the New Barbarians, very important. And then our four-tape set, Islam, the Religion of Doom, where you'll actually hear my interviews with Craig Wynn, who is a multimillionaire, who has actually gone over and talked to the Islamic terrorists. And he simply had studied the Quran and the Hadith and the other Muslim holy books and simply had all of their quotations about how this is a demonic religion. Then, if that indeed is true, why would the American forces have installed a government under Sharia law in Iraq? I mean, here was a chance to bring democracy and freedom to the people, and what did we do? We installed a government under Sharia law where there is no freedom. Everything, of course, is under the church. And why would you do something that stupid? Unintentionally. Perhaps it was because the President of the United States worships the God of the Muslims. He said we all worship the same God. Well, he may worship that God. George Herbert Walker Bush and George Bush and the people in Washington, D.C. today worship that God. But that is not the God of the Bible. Our number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, RadioLiberty.com. Would love to hear from you. And please pray for Radio Liberty. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's got to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of William Grigg, formerly editor of the New American Magazine, and now writing his blogs and doing his radio programs and writing his books and terribly, terribly busy simply trying to educate the American people about the very real threat we face today. As we move away from a free society into a police state where everything is regulated from the cradle to the grave, where there is a system of informants being installed all across the country, where people are being encouraged to spy on their neighbors and report their neighbors just as they did in East Germany under the Stasi, people really don't understand what's going on. We're told, oh, we've got to be protected from the wicked terrorists. Ladies and gentlemen, we financed the whole terrorist movement here in America and throughout the world for many years. In fact, certainly the Sybil Edmonds recently came forward, and she had actually worked for the FBI, and she had translated a great number of communications that the FBI had intercepted, and she came forward just recently and said the United States financed Osama bin Laden right up until September 11th. Of course, we worked with their al-Qaeda in Bosnia, we worked with the al-Qaeda forces in Kosovo, and but, of course, you're not going to hear that on 60 Minutes. You're supposed to believe, of course, that the radical Islamic movement is out there and the boogeyman's going to get us. Osama bin Laden, of course, is going to take over America, and that's why we've got to give the government police state powers and the ability to monitor everything to protect us from the wicked Osama bin Laden, who's probably been dead for a half a dozen years or more. He was on dialysis. He was a very ill man. You don't survive in a cave, you know, in Pakistan, needing dialysis, of course, for 8 long, terrible years. So we're being lied to. In fact, there's a wonderful book out by David Lee Griffith going into Osama bin Laden, Dead or Alive. We've interviewed Mr. Griffith on that. And I think he's absolutely right. All of the evidence suggests that Osama bin Laden died long ago. He is only being kept alive by the CIA, who certifies that he's alive. Why? Because we need an enemy. Well, with that as the background, William, thanks very much for being with us tonight.
Dr. Stan, it's always a pleasure. Thanks so much for having me on your program once again.
What are we going to talk about?
I'd like to approach a lot of the subjects that you've been addressing in your introduction from sort of a different angle than we're used to pursuing, and that has to do, the angle that I'd like to pursue has to do with the question of basic morality and the way that our modern world is sort of a reflection of some things that were done in the 18th century to change the moral template of Western society. We've talked before about the influence of these supposed intellectuals that were part of what's called the Enlightenment, and the effort undertaken in the Enlightenment was to reorganize human society as if God didn't exist. And that, of course, is the way that the ancient Babylonian system was set up as well, according to Josephus and some of the ancient Jewish historians, that Nimrod, the founder of Babylon, wanted to create a society where everybody would be dependent upon government and ignore their obligations to God, and what God's law dictates would be our obligations to each other. And that's something which enjoyed a renaissance in the 18th century, and we're living with the effects and the consequences of it now. In all these issues you're talking about, at the bedrock, the foundation of each of them is a breakdown of traditional Christian or biblical morality.
Well, of course, as we always point out, we're really involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political, ideological, and cultural battlefield, but it's really a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. We'll be back in just a moment with William Grigg. William, pick the story up.
One of the largely unacknowledged makers of the modern world in terms of the moral or amoral foundation of the society we're living in was the Marquis de Sade. There's a wonderful section in a book, and I'd consider it an indispensable book, by the late Erich Ritter von Quenelle-Levin. Mr. Erich Ritter von Quenelle-Levin was an Austrian-born scholar. Some of us just recently celebrated the 100th anniversary of his birth. His last book was called Leftism Revisited, and it talked about the Marquis de Sade as one of the unacknowledged founders of what we now call revolutionary socialism. And he was somebody whose influence was sort of subtle in that very few people wanted openly to acknowledge that they were in any way influenced by this guy, who was properly disreputable as the exemplar of everything that was the opposite of virtue. The term sadism, of course, has entered our vocabulary as a word describing a perverse pleasure that is taken from the pain of other people. If you are the sort of a person who extracts some kind of satisfaction from observing the pain of other living creatures or other people particularly, you're described as a sadist, and that was one facet of his depravity. But it's not well understood that he considered himself to be a political theoretician, and his fundamental ethic was exactly the opposite of the golden rule. This is how he defined his moral imperative. Were I to discover that my only possibility of happiness lay in excessive perpetration of the most atrocious crimes, without a qualm I'd enact every last one of them to this very instant, certain that the foremost of the laws nature decrees to me is to enjoy myself, no matter at whose expense. The idea was that morality for Sade consisted of satiating whatever desires happened to catch his fancy at any given minute, and in the pursuit of this pleasure, everybody else was simply raw material to be used in pursuing the satisfaction of those appetites. And he published a number of books that I would not read. I would not recommend people would read. I made a good faith effort to read Juliet. I would not recommend that people read any of it. I literally at one point picked up this very large book. It was, I believe, over 1,000 pages long. I picked it up and threw it across the room in mortal disgust. I just simply couldn't get past page 45 or 50 of that book. And the only reason I was doing that was to try to extract from this absolutely horrible narrative everything I could by way of this guy's philosophy, for lack of a better way of describing his view of life. I mean, this is not a philosophy. Somebody who's a philosopher...
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment, William. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and William is basically talking about the philosophy of the Marquis de Sade, for whom the term sadism comes out. And, of course, we actually have a whole contingent of society that are actively involved in sadism. And what people do not understand is this is very prevalent in our society. It is being actually glorified in Washington, D.C. It is part of the homosexual lifestyle. About 25% of homosexuals are into so-called S&M. They call them the boys in leather, the boys in chains. How can you possibly want to actually encourage this sort of thing, beginning teaching our children in kindergarten that the homosexual lifestyle is a normal, happy lifestyle, when approximately 25% of the homosexual lifestyle people involved in that are involved with sadism and masochism? And those who haven't ever seen the DVD, or I guess it's a video, called The Gay Agenda, The Gay Agenda. Really, I think we still have a few copies of it. You need to get it. You need to watch it. This has been totally suppressed across America, but at one time, back in 1992 or 1993, this was actually what was shown to the members of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. When Bill Clinton wanted, of course, to have open homosexuality in the military, and the military said, Mr. President, no, we will not allow open homosexuality. After they saw that video, we still have it. You will not find it on the Internet today. Go right ahead.
The type of people you're describing here, who are considered sort of the fringes of the so-called gay rights movement, really do represent sort of the outer marker of the whole worldview that the Marquis de Sade was promoting. And you're right when you talk about the fact that there are people who are his disciples, but it's not well understood just how widespread it is, the discipleship of those who subscribe to the tenets that were popularized by Sade, because not many people understand that Sade had a coherent worldview that informed not only perverse pursuit of sexual gratification, but it involved a complete and systematic destruction of the Christian worldview, of the Christian moral basis for society. Let me read just a couple of excerpts that I was able to get out of that book before I destroyed it. This is the course of a lecture by Saad's character to the title character from the book Juliet. Modesty is an illusion, and she's being tutored. She, of course, had been a nun. She was being tutored in blasphemy and perversion. Modesty is an illusion, the result of naught but our cultural manners and our upbringing. Conscience, according to this point of view, was nothing but a reflection of prejudices inculcated by training and upbringing. Veritable wisdom, my dear Juliet, consists not in repressing one's vices. The true and approved way is to surrender oneself to them, to practice them to the utmost. It consists simply in reiterating the deeds that have made us remorseful, and repeating them so often that the habit either of committing these deeds or of getting away scot-free with them completely undermines the possibility of feeling badly about them. This habit topples the prejudice, destroys it. This habit at length makes the vice wholly bearable and even delicious to the soul. That's the perspective here, that through repetition and by inuring ourselves to something that we had previously considered to be completely unacceptable, we destroy the capacity for our conscience to register its disapproval. I mean, this is what the Bible talks about when they talk about conscience as being seared with a hot iron, or what Pope Seamus Quatrain talked about in terms of vice being a monster so fearful of mean. I can't remember how it goes exactly, but it talks about how first we revile, then we pity, then we embrace. This is the process that Saad was talking about, by way of desensitizing people step by step to things that had previously been completely loathsome and rejected. And that, of course, is sort of the method that is being pursued in public schools with respect to so-called safe sex, with respect to the cultivation of respect for what we're told are alternative lifestyles, but in fact involve nothing but an attempt to service the appetites of the individual. And that's something that, as well, the whole idea of using the government school system in order to pursue this strategy on a mass basis was something that Assad talked about. He anticipated in Juliet that his disciples would, and I'm quoting now, create public schools where, as soon as they are weaned, the young may be reared, installed therein as ward of the state. The child can forget even his mother's name. After he's grown up, let him in turn couple indiscriminately democratically with his mates and his brethren, doing so as his parents did before him. Now, from Saad's perspective, children have to be raised by the state in order to become sexual predators, and this would be basically the only way that they would be living a life that he would consider to be praiseworthy. And also, Saad talked about abortion. I'm quoting once again from Saad's writings. The embryo is to be considered the woman's exclusive property. She can dispose of it as she likes. Now, that's something that would not be out of place in the Planned Parenthood pamphlet. She can destroy it in the depths of her womb if it proves a nuisance to her, or after it ripens and is born, if she for any reason is displeased with it or irked at having produced it, she can destroy it then. Whatever the circumstances, infanticide is her sacred right. Her spawn is hers, entirely hers, and the mother may feed it, or she may strangle it, depending upon her preference. It's almost as if Saad had been given, forgive me, I should just refer to him as Saad, that's the grammatically appropriate way to refer to that name, the Marquis de Saad had been given an advanced copy a couple of hundred years before the Cultural Revolution in the United States of the 50s and 60s, and was just going down the checklist. He's talking about doing away with inhibitions against the consumption of pornography, doing away with the standard of marital fidelity that was defined by the Bible and by Christian culture, with the chastity and modesty being put to the torch, talking about the use of government schools to propagate not only licentious behavior of the conventional type, but also to cultivate an appetite within students for all kinds of perverse and self-destructive behavior, the destruction of any inhibitions of any kind on any kind of sexual behavior, and, of course, the death ethic here with respect to abortion and infanticide. He was unabashedly pro-choice regarding genocide just as much and just as passionately as he was regarding abortion. Now, here's another quote directly from de Saad's writings. If from immolating, that is to say burning to death, 3 million human victims, you stand to gain no livelier pleasure than that to be had from eating a good dinner, you ought to treat yourself to it without an instant's hesitation. And then he put this in the context, interestingly enough, of what we would now call radical environmentalism. Nature stands in not the slightest need of human propagation, and the total disappearance of mankind would grieve her very little. That, of course, is the mantra that's being sung by some of the deep ecologists. The people believe that the Earth is a self-regulating and in some sense self-created organism, that mankind is an affliction upon the surface of the Earth, that we have stepped out of our role as being one merely of many millions of species in what should be a democratic biosphere. There are people like the chief science advisor to President Barack Obama who have expressed a view of humanity and of overpopulation, supposed overpopulation, that really is in harmony with the basic tenets of Assad's thought on this subject, namely that nature really is in need of any more human beings, that we're dealing with a surplus population anyway, and whether you're doing it in order to feed some kind of illicit appetite or you're doing it out of some kind of perverse principle, dispensing with people actually can be justified as an ecologically sound measure. Whether you're talking about doing away with so-called unwanted children through abortion or infanticide, or whether you're arranging the summary destruction of thousands, tens of thousands, or millions of human beings, in the final analysis, from the sadist perspective, if you will, it actually is a sound thing to do because nature really doesn't need an additional human presence on the Earth. And, of course, there were limits to what Saad preached in terms of acceptable versions of homicide. He was somebody who believed that it was a blasphemy to kill in the name of God, but it was a perfectly acceptable and commendable thing to kill in the name of the state. He wrote that hearing the name of God, and I quote again, rouses my ire. When I hear his name pronounced, I seem to see all around me the palpitating shades of all those woebegone creatures this abominable opinion has slaughtered on the face of the earth. And Saad was involved in precipitating the French Revolution. He was sort of an outlier, if you will, in the Illuminist movement. He ended up in the Bastille prior to the liberation, quote-unquote, of the Bastille on July 14th of 1789. He was one of the handful of people who were immured within the Bastille at the time when he was there because his family had put him there because they considered him to be criminally insane. He could not quite bring himself to approve of the Reign of Terror. I'm quoting from a British writer by the name of Geoffrey Ash, who wrote a history of what he called the anti-morality movement of the Enlightenment. He said that the French Revolutionary Terror did not please Saad at all because the killing was being done from a bad motive, politics, instead of pleasure. Now, the problem here, of course, is that, as Ash points out, the perfected sadist has to live on a mental level which very few could attain. He asserts freedom by the only nonconformity that is still open, trying coolly to beat horrific nature at her own game. He has passed beyond ordinary enjoyment into a conscious, experimental stoicism of sex and violence where every frenzy is self-induced and under control. He has no feelings as most human beings have them, no love, of course, no inclination to value anything for its own sake, except as it gives him greater pleasure. He is entangled with nobody. He has an exterminatory contempt for everybody except his co-sadists and is ready to betray even them. So people who pursue this point of view, people who are consumed by the, what you might call, sadistic ideal, the ideal of the life of pleasure as defined by Saad, eventually find themselves so completely unable to feel aroused to any kind of passion except through the destruction of other people that they turn on themselves. And I believe that at the core of this power elite that we're talking about, we're dealing with human personality types who are that way, that the only pleasure they get is by exercising power and dominion over others, by the discretionary power to kill as many people as they see fit or rearrange the lives of others according to their whims, and eventually they're perfectly capable of turning on each other if they have to.
Of course, we saw this in Hitler's Germany. It seems incredible that people, you know, with degrees in theology and philosophy and physicians would have participated in what happened in Germany. And yet the spiritual force that energized those men, I fear, is alive and well in the United States today. William, go right ahead.
I mean, even if you're talking about just the aggregate influence, the cumulative influence of emancipated human nature, you're exactly right. I mean, that's bad enough there's enough nasty stuff in debased human nature that when it begins to cohere in large movements, then horrible things will happen. Dr. Stan, that's one of the reasons why I always get a little bit uncomfortable whenever, I mean, any kind of a setting, whether it's political, ceremonial, religious, athletic, when you have thousands of people or larger groups doing things in unison, I'm just reflexively, instinctively suspicious of that type of unity in that volume of humanity, because I understand how dangerous it is for people to feel a sense of collective power. And because for whatever reason, I don't know why this is, I suspect it's just one element of our fallen nature. Whenever you have a democratic consensus being achieved among a large group of people, it's usually something that's cultivated by a demagogue or by some ambitious oligarchy, some ambitious group of people who have really bad ideas about how they're going to use that power. Whenever you have that type of a democratic consensus, people very rarely, if ever, I don't know if we ever have a really good example of the contrary proposition, that you never see people get together except for the purpose of hating somebody or something or punishing somebody or something. Even when you see large celebrations of otherwise commendable impulses, there's always the flavor there that this group of people wants to go out and impose its will, impose its power upon somebody else. I just recently published an essay on my blog talking about what I call punitive populism and the fact that there's this appetite in the American public to use the power of government to punish others. I mean, we can certainly see that in our partisan politics. We can certainly see where people are defined in their partisan politics by hate objects rather than by shared ideals. And that's something that Eric Hoffer, in his book, The True Believer, talked about. He was a very, very astute observer of human nature. He talked about what he called the unifying element of any large movement. Any mass movement has to have a unifying element. And the unifying element is always something that the movement defines itself as an opposition. It's something that is used by a popular movement as sort of a negative or antithesis of what the movement seeks to achieve. You always define yourself in opposition to something that you want to overcome, to punish, to defeat, to vanquish, and overcome. Now, there are righteous causes that involve vanquishing some things. I mean, certainly, if you're talking about a religious ceremony where people get together to celebrate God's triumph over sin, that's one thing. If you talk about people getting together to celebrate the grace of God is made tangible in the person of Jesus Christ and the way that he on the cross expiated the sins of those who accept his sacrifice, that's one thing, because you're acknowledging that there's something about you that is flawed that needs to be mended and healed by God. But if you start talking about a group of people getting together for the collective purpose of supposedly remaking or healing the world, they're always going to talk about some other group of people. They're always going to talk about some other group that they want to have power over. Now, those of us who are opposing what the power leader doing recognize in broad outline that we do have a human enemy. But the thing is, we're trying to take power away from them, and we're trying to put power outside the reach of human hands. We're talking about the idea of a movement that is based upon the repudiation of power over others, and we're talking about the idea of exercising our influence.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest, of course, is William Grigg, as we always have on Friday evening. And William is being philosophical, talking about these ideas that we have of how basically to create a better society. And, of course, as William points out, usually you have one group wanting to take power away from the others. The Democrats want to take power away from the Republicans. The Republicans want to take power away from the Democrats. But the unique thing about the American form of government was that they wanted to limit the power so that nobody would have the power to be used against the people. That is why America is different than any other nation. There is no way that you can use the power of government to actually create a just society, because there's power there. You're always going to use that power to take from one group to give to another group. The solution, of course, is to have no power or as little power as is possible so that men could be free. And, of course, it's an imperfect society, but then society by itself is imperfect,
exactly.
But it's by far better than anything else we can possibly have. And that government that governs best governs the least. But go right ahead, William.
That's exactly right. We have to recognize that the only power that we should seek for its own sake is the power to regulate ourselves. That is to say, the power to define our lives, to define how we're going to live, in the sense that we will recognize the reciprocal rights of others. That's what the Golden Rule is all about. That's why the Golden Rule really is the founding credo of the Western view of rights. You know, that we should do unto others as we would have them do unto us. And the fact that the two great commandments is taught both in Deuteronomy and then reiterated by the lawgiver in the New Testament teach us that we should love God above all other things and then love our neighbor as ourself. And, of course, the golden text, the golden rule, rather, is how we carry out the second great commandment, you know, love each other as we would love our neighbor as ourself by recognizing his rights, recognizing that our neighbor has exactly the same set of rights that we have. And if you live according to those two commandments, basically what you're doing is you're repudiating the need for having some kind of a terrestrial or human check upon human behavior. And the great insight of the Founding Fathers, and one that really was at variance with the European tradition, including the British tradition of power, was in recognizing that those who are lent power by the people, those who are in positions of political authority, elected or appointed, are made out of exactly the same stuff as the rest of the population. The power doesn't purify their blood, it doesn't exalt them, it doesn't ennoble them, it doesn't make them in any sense immune to the temptations and failings that characterize the rest of us, and for that reason they can't be trusted with power. Now, the point of view promoted by Sod, on the other hand, was that power is the only thing worth having because it's only by having power that you can pursue the indulgence of all your appetites at the expense of everybody else. And that was really the concept that became the unacknowledged, publicly unacknowledged, but privately defining credo of the revolutionary left. One of the chief catchphrases of the revolutionary left, as Dostoevsky pointed out in his book, it's called The Devils in some translation and The Possessed in other translations. And of course, Dostoevsky had spent some time in the revolutionary underground in Russia, and this is something you read about in the book Fire in the Minds of Men, which we've referred to on a couple of occasions here by the incumbent librarian of Congress. But if you understand this one insight, where Dostoevsky said that their central organizing credo was, to us everything is permitted. You know, if you don't believe in God, everything is permitted to you. That was actually the key so-called wisdom, the hidden wisdom of the radical revolutionary left. And that actually bobbed to the surface in some of the writings of the early Soviet Union, in the newspapers that were put out by the Cheka, which was the Soviet secret police that became the KGB. One of the things that I've quoted on a couple of occasions in a couple of the essays that I've written is an editorial which appeared in the first issue of Krasny Mich. That means Red Sword. That was the official newspaper of the Cheka. It was the following. Quote, we reject the old systems of morality. Our morality has no precedent, and our humanity is absolute because it rests on a new ideal. Our aim is to destroy all forms of oppression and violence. To us, everything is permitted. Blood, let blood flow like water, for only through the death of the old world can we liberate ourselves. That was the Marquis de Sade's credo, as expressed by the KGB at the founding of the Soviet dictatorship in 1917, 1918. I contend that's the animating spirit of collectivism today, and America has got a really bad bout of it.
And, of course, the American people, most of them still value freedom. But, I mean, what are you going to do? Are you going to pick the Republicans who are controlled by the same people that control the Democrats? Both parties are pushing for ever bigger government. The Republicans simply want to cut back a little bit. But when they had the power, why was all power to the state, all benefit to the ruling class?
Night with the light from above.
Well, this is Dr. Stan William. Go right ahead there.
One illustration of the extent to which Assad's view of morality, or amorality, if you will, his idea of expediency, his idea of justifying the exercise of grotesque power over other human people, is the legitimation of torture just over the last 8 years here in the United States. That's something I never expected to see. It was understood in previous generations that there were things that were done, often in the course of the Indian Wars, for instance, or in the occupation of the Philippines, that were pretty horrible. And there were people actually prosecuted for torturing Indians. There were people who were prosecuted for torturing Filipinos during the occupation of the Philippines following the Spanish-American War. What's happened now that is different is that it's no longer looked upon as a crime. It's looked upon as a legitimate tactic. And there was a survey published in The Economist magazine just a few weeks ago that really shocked me. It was a survey conducted by World Public Opinion, and they went through and they canvassed a large sample from 14 nations on their views of torture. They asked two questions. They asked, which of these two propositions do you agree with? Either all torture should be prohibited, or some degree of torture should be allowed. Now, at the top of the list of the nations that opposed torture was Great Britain. 80%, actually about 82% of the population, said that all torture should be prohibited, and about 15% said that some torture should be allowed. And Britain is a government, by the way, that has practiced torture. It has interrogated people using means that we'd call torture for many, many years. It's on the books, as a matter of fact, that the penalty for high treason is death by torture. They don't, of course, carry that out, but that's still on the books. The findings from France were almost identical. The findings from Spain were almost identical. China, the population of China, perhaps because they have a government that does practice torture, over 65% of the population of China opposed torture in all circumstances. Poland, about 55%. Indonesia, which...
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and go right ahead, William, with that thought. You were talking about certainly how some societies actually condone torture. Certainly, at one time, this was a standard operating procedure in Great Britain. Mm-hmm. If you were guilty of treason, you were tortured to death. And go right ahead.
Yes. And now, of course, sentiments have changed and moral values have changed. 80% of the population, 82% of the population of Great Britain opposes torture in all circumstances. That's the same finding for France and Spain. In China, over 65% of the population opposes torture in all circumstances. The population of Poland, over 62%, opposes torture in all circumstances. Indonesia and Egypt are both on the list here. They're, I think, seven and eight on the list. Indonesia is above Egypt. Indonesia, over 61% of the population opposes torture in all circumstances. And the population of Egypt, over 55%, opposes torture in all circumstances. The United States comes in at number 9 on the list. Actually, number 8 on the list, below Indonesia and Egypt and China. Over 50%, about 52% of the population of the United States, according to the survey, supports, or rather, 52% or thereabouts opposes torture in all circumstances. Over 45% supports the use of torture in some circumstances.
And you know, you can't help but wonder when you hear a statistic like that, what happened to the soul of America?
Exactly.
And of course, we know very well what happened. They've been watching television, and they're heroes of torturing people because they're trying to protect the American people. And that's ridiculous. Torture doesn't work. If you're going to torture people, they're going to lie to you.
Exactly.
And certainly, but certainly the people who created these television programs knew that. But what they wanted to do was to rape the soul of our people and destroy their moral foundation. And we as a nation are in real trouble today. And you know what really bothers me, William, is the fact that I have never yet heard a major religious figure in the United States and any place, go on television or go on the radio and say, torture is wrong, and George Bush is wrong in advocating torture, and the Republicans are wrong. But you see, there are an awful lot of our religious leaders who believe that God is a Republican, and after all, if God condones torture, it's all right. Before we go on, I want you to go ahead and get out your website. I want you to tell people how they can get your book. Of course, we do carry your book, Liberty and Eclipse, but how they can get your publications, how they can certainly listen to your radio program, and for our listeners out there, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Here, if you have a question or comment for William, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. But please go ahead and let people know how they can get in touch with your ministry and perhaps contribute if they can. Did you ever get that PayPal button up on your website?
I'm still working on it.
Okay, fine.
I really need
well, I'll tell you what, we put one up. I didn't want to. I hate to ask people for money, but mm-hmm. I finally got talked into it, and it's been, well, it's been very beneficial. Let's put it that way. So you go right ahead with the story.
Well, I do appreciate you giving me the opportunity to plug my writing and my work. My writings are available at Pro Libertate, which is a blog that I write. Usually I update it between 3 and 5 times a week, depending upon my schedule. And to go directly to it, it's pretty easy. You can either go to Google or some other search engine and type in Pro Libertate and the last name Grigg. And, of course, that would be the first result you get if you put in those two search terms. Or you can go to freedominourtime.blogspot.com. Freedom in Our Time is one compound word, freedominourtime.blogspot.com. Another way you can get there is to go to willgrigg.com and go to the right-hand side of the page that comes up at willgrigg.com and look at the external links. At the top of that list, there is a hyperlink, an external link to Pro Libertate. And at the end of every essay that I publish, and they're usually about 2,000 words in length, I am trying to cut down, but I'm not being very successful at imposing the discipline of brevity on myself. At the end of every essay, there's a thumbnail of the cover art to Liberty and Eclipse, which is my most recent book. And you can go to Amazon.com by clicking on a link which is right next to that cover illustration and purchase it directly from Amazon.com, or you can go to Radio Liberty and buy Liberty and Eclipse. And I do appreciate that you're carrying that book for us. And I also am very happy to be involved with the Liberty News Radio Network. I have an evening program. It's drive time in the Mountain States from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock Mountain Time or from 6 o'clock to 7 Central Time at libertynewsradio.com. And I'm on 1 hour a night from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock local time here in Idaho from Monday to Friday. And it's been a real experience to be doing this program because I've often thought that of all the media, the best way to reach out to people is through radio. The Internet, of course, is a wonderful tool. It's a wonderful gift. It can be a liability in some ways. But the problem with the Internet, of course, is that there is such a manic, antic profusion of voices, it's often difficult to disambiguate what you find on the Internet in a way that will lead you to something that's valuable. Whereas people who listen to the radio, by and large, and of course this is something that was broadcast by the Internet as well as being broadcast by the terrestrial radio stations that subscribe to the Liberty News Radio Network, but the advantage of radio here, of course, is that this is something that you can do by way of providing a backdrop, if you will, sort of like the RL wallpaper, for whatever it is that you're doing that is worthwhile. If you're driving somewhere, of course, those of us who are busy with lives where we have jobs to take care of and families to care for, often find ourselves in an automobile a great deal of the day. That's a really good way, of course, to be listening to somebody who's trying to propagate the message of freedom. And so I've been excited to have access to an audience, hopefully a growing one. I'm really not apprised of what's going on in terms of the expansion of this relatively new network, but it's a worthwhile thing because I've gotten good response from people all across the country, literally from California to Florida, and I've also gotten responses from as far south as Mexico. And it's a tremendous asset, whether you're talking about Internet simulcast, which is a really wonderful way of emancipating the radio medium from the limits, the geographical limits of most radio, or whether you're talking about people who listen to it in their cars or in their homes. So that's libertynewsradio.com, and the Pro Libertate radio program is on from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock, that would be Mountain Time, or 6 to 7 o'clock Central Time. The other thing that I've been doing is I've been contributing a great deal to the blog section of the LouRockwell.com website. Lou Rockwell is a wonderful man. He's the president of the Mises Institute, which is a think tank devoted to Austrian economics, to the thought of Ludwig von Mises and Murray Rothbard and Friedrich Hayek and others, many of them refugees from socialist countries, some of them converts to the cause of hard money and hard law, if you will. That is to say, money which is backed by specie, by hard currency, gold and silver, and the limitation by the use of that, by the use of hard money, the limitation on what a banking system can do to the currency and what a government can do by way of spending. They understand that one of the core insights here, one of the key means of disciplining a government, is holding it to the standard of gold and silver as used in currency transactions. And, of course, they believe that the market should set the value of the currency, not the government. The government should not be arbitrarily setting that value. And they're, of course, the main enemies of the Federal Reserve, which is a pretty near approximation to the focus of evil in the modern world. Yes. And Lou Rockwell has a website, LouRockwell.com, that is probably the most widely read of the freedom-oriented, if you will, libertarian or individualist websites in the world. He's got an essay of mine up today, as a matter of fact. It's the one that talks about punitive populism. And he also has me contributing to the blog section. The blog is a very active section of his website. And so go to LouRockwell.com and read, quite frankly, everything that you can find there. Because Lou Rockwell is a wonderfully eclectic editor. His interests are wide-ranging. He'll surprise you with things every once in a while. I found that it's to my considerable profit if I sample what he has to say, because he takes off in interesting tangents that always have something to do with the idea of preserving human freedom and dignity.
All right, well, we've got Maggie calling us from Texas. Let's just see what Maggie has to say. Maggie, do you have a question or comment for our guest?
Yes. Well, it relates to him, but it's more a response to a comment of yours. I make trips to St. Louis, and on several of my trips over the past year, I noticed one particular Presbyterian church that had a banner hanging below one of the windows that said, "Torture is wrong." And it really, really struck me, because I had never seen anything like that before on
well,
a church.
Well, just be thankful that at least some of our brethren have the courage to speak out and who realize that God really is not a member of the Republican Party and was not a supporter of George Bush. Anything else you want to say, Maggie, before we let you
go? I just wanted to let you know about that.
Thank you. God bless. Thanks very much. And I'm sure that there are good ministers out there who have spoken out. But, I mean, the few and far between, and certainly we haven't heard the voice, but at least Maggie saw the banner, and I appreciate her calling.
Yeah, well, God be praised.
Go ahead.
I was going to mention that one of the other things that I find really disheartening here, I'd mentioned the survey which put the United States down really in the lower third of the nation surveyed regarding the proportion of the public who opposes torture and versus the proportion of the public that supports torture. No, really, it's a 50-50 proposition right now, and I can't believe that we would have been that depraved a century ago. I think that, quite frankly, we probably would have been at the other end of the list. We probably would have been where Great Britain is, because what distinguished the United States, what distinguished the American culture from Europe, was this idea of human dignity and the fundamental worth of the individual and the limits that you have to put on what you can do to that individual, even when that individual has been convicted of a crime. We have a constitution that outlaws cruel and unusual punishment for those convicted of crimes. And you're talking about the imposition of cruel and unusual punishment for those who are suspected of crimes, or simply those who have in some way offended people who are exercising government power. And Dr. Stan, you point out the fact that torture is not something that can be defended in the name of utility. You really can't get reliable intelligence through torture. That's not the purpose of torture. As Vladimir Bukovsky, the former Soviet dissident who was tortured in the late 1960s, has pointed out. He wrote a very brave and forthright editorial that was published by the Washington Post in December 2005 about torture, one of the things he pointed out was that torture is perfectly useless as a method of obtaining actionable intelligence, but it is a wonderful tool for extracting false confessions, which is why it was practiced so widely by the NKVD, the forerunner of the KGB, the descendant of the Cheka, under Joseph Stalin. And then the other thing he pointed out was that torture is something that has these metastasizing social impacts. Not only does it result in the moral corruption of an entire society, but it destroys the value of actual law enforcement entities because they get involved in the business of pleasing, for political purposes and personal gain, pleasing the people at the top of the political structure at the expense of the truth. You no longer are able to find out who actually committed crimes. Everybody's too busy trying to validate the prejudices of the people who signed their paychecks. And that's exactly what happened under the Bush administration. Under the Bush administration, you had people being tortured in black sites throughout the world, and also being tortured at Bagram, and tortured in Egypt, tortured in Gitmo, in order to validate the demented theories of Dick Cheney regarding certain developments in the so-called war on terrorism, and to try to provide a rationale after the fact for the invasion of Iraq. These people were being tortured in order to ratify a lie, and some of the people who were tortured to do this were American citizens. We talked about Jose Padilla. Not a good guy. He was a gangbanger, pretty disreputable sort, but he was still an American citizen. He was tortured because a fellow by the name of Binyan Muhammad was tortured. He was put, literally, he was subjected in Ethiopia, I'm not sure, but he was tortured under CIA supervision by somebody who took a scalpel to his genitals in order to get him to sign a confession that implicated Jose Padilla. Jose Padilla was arrested on the basis of this allegation that was made through sadistic, in a specific Marquis de Sade sense, sadistic torture of Binyan Muhammad. He was arrested, then he was put in a brig as an unlawful enemy combatant, the first U.S. citizen to be given that designation, and he was tortured for a couple of years. His brain and his personality were destroyed. This was done by our government within the last several years. And not only are we at a point now where half of the population can countenance this, that half of the population is one in which the evangelical Christian church is grotesquely overrepresented. There was a survey taken earlier this year that found that 54% of the people who support, let me have it, 54% of those who supported torture in that poll go to church at least once a week and consider themselves to be faithful evangelical Christians. Now, these are people who profess to have a personal relationship with Jesus of Nazareth. Jesus of Nazareth was tortured. Does anybody remember this? Our Lord was tortured. He was put to death. Actually, he wasn't put to death. He gave up his life. Nobody could take his life. He gave it up for us. But before he gave up his life for us, he was subjected to every fiendish measure that the perverse ingenuity of the professional torturer could devise. These people profess to have a relationship with Jesus Christ. One has to wonder if it's a particularly close one, because I don't believe that somebody who actually knows the Lord could countenance the torture of another human being, knowing what our Lord went through.
Well, of course, you know, as we consider what happened during the Bush administration, we have to understand that the major force behind what went on was Dick Cheney.
Yes.
Who is Dick Cheney? Well, of course, he is a member of the Trilateral Commission. He has been for many years. He's part of what I call the Brotherhood of Darkness. But even more, he has a very, very sordid past. In fact, there is a book we carry called The Transformation of America. It was written by Kathy O'Brien, who was a sex slave for the CIA. I've met Kathy. I've talked to her. I believe she's telling the truth. And this book was written long before Dick Cheney became the Vice President of the United States. And if you haven't read the book Transformation of America, let me recommend it to you. It's not a nice book.
No,
and the things it says about Dick Cheney are not really very nice. But I suspect they are really very, very accurate. And you could understand after reading that why Dick Cheney would take great pleasure and glee at the thought of torturing innocent people.
What I find really interesting about the Cheney family is that his wife, who is the head of, wasn't she the head of the National Endowment for Humanities for a period? I can't remember for sure, but she was involved in that. She's one of these people who are always on television pontificating about morality and about American exceptionalism, and she wrote a novel that was utterly pornographic. And this is somebody, of course, who's being urged upon us as an exemplar, as a defender of American values, and for some reason she decided to embosom herself in this pornographic novel. And that tells me something about that household. You know?
Well, I will tell you what, according to Kathy, whether it's true or not, she said that the daughter, who is a lesbian, was given a copy of the book, of Transformation of America, which Kathy had written. And Kathy, after reading, pardon me, the daughter, after reading the book, said, well, nothing would surprise me about Daddy. So,
boy.
I mean, that makes you sort of really wonder what sort of a dysfunctional family they have. Well, our guest this evening is certainly William Grigg. We live in a fallen world, but fortunately we do have the Lord. Well, right now we've got Marilyn on the line from the Bay Area. Hi, Marilyn. How are you doing?
Hi. I wait every Friday night at 9 o'clock to listen to you and Mr. Grigg. I really appreciate it.
What a wonderful thing to say.
You were speaking of Sod and all the, you know, the history of sort of perversion and the Enlightenment and all that. I wonder if you saw the recent, I know Barry Shamish put this out, the mass pedophile wedding they had in the Gaza, corresponding at the same time with the murders in a teen club in Israel. And if you have any opinions, you know, on that kind of thing. And it almost seems like a stage event.
Well, of course, what Marilyn is talking about, there were about 500 Palestinians, young men, probably between 18 and 25, 30, something like that, who were in their tuxedos, and of course they were marrying these little girls 9 years old. These were Muslims. These were Muslim weddings. What in heaven's name is going on?
Well, that's part of the whole package. I mean, this is something which has been propagated through one particular strain of the Islamic faith for centuries. Not necessarily the dominant strain, but it has been propagated that way. And it's something that has really taken root in some areas of the world. And, of course, the Middle East is notorious for this. But what really shocks me, of course, is the extent to which it's taking root here. And we're supposed to have an immunity to that type of depravity, but that we lost that immunity because we started to believe in ourselves rather than believing in the Creator. You know, you start to worship the creation rather than the Creator. It's a fatal type of narcissism, and it destroys your moral immunity.
We got a real problem. America has lost its soul. We have to try to regain it. Thanks so much for calling, Marilyn.
Thank you.
God bless. And so our guest this evening has been William Grigg, and William, I really appreciate so much for being with us, and I hope you'll be able to be with us again next week.
Oh, I hope so, too. It's always a pleasure.
And we're really looking forward, of course, to having you down here on October the 25th as our guest at the annual Radio Liberty Conference. So thanks very much. We'll talk to you off the air. You get your airfare and get things all straightened out, and we'll look forward to having you with us.
Thanks so much, Dr. Stan. God bless.
And you, too. Bye-bye. Bye. All right, fine. Well, of course, one of the high points of the week is having an opportunity to suddenly talk to William. What we really are talking about, the Marquis de Sade, is very much like certainly the Machiavelli, and the modern day Machiavellis are the neocons. And who leads the neocons? A man named Dick Cheney. So from the Marquis de Sade to Machiavelli to the neocons to Dick Cheney, and unfortunately, America is in real trouble today. We'll be right back in a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we do hope, of course, you enjoyed our conversation with William Grigg. We actually have a pamphlet we put out, writings of Ron Paul, and gets into the background of the neoconservative movement. We actually have written some of our newsletters on the neoconservative movement, which is a modern-day manifestation of Machiavellianism and the philosophy of the Marquis de Sade, and people must understand the true nature of the evil we face today. If you've not yet read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it and you need to read it. That's the Brotherhood of Darkness. You can actually, don't have the funds, you can go up on the internet, scroll down to videos and scroll down videos to Brotherhood of Darkness and watch the talk. But the book has the advantage that you have the documentation and you can show it to others. you need to hear my talk on the forbidden secret, because there is a secret that has been passed down through the secret societies for 5,000 years. And it is manifest today in certainly a book called The Secret by Rhonda Byrne, featured, of all places, by Oprah Winfrey. And so what's the secret she's talking about? The same secret we're talking about. There is a force out there that you can tap into it, and they tell you you really want to tap into it, and we tell you if you tap into it, it could cost you your eternal soul. The Forbidden Secret comes with a syllabus if you want it. Then my talk on the financial Armageddon, what's it explained to you, who Barack Obama really is, who really brought him to power, because, of course, it's not so much what you think or, well, you certainly want to get the forbidden, pardon me, the financial Armageddon. There's a talk, there's a syllabus. We have, of course, books on satanic crimes. We actually have a four-tape set on satanic crimes. We have a four-tape set or four-CD set on the supernatural. And there really is a supernatural element out there. We have a book called Diary of a Devil Hunter. Understand these forces are at work in our society today. We certainly have an excellent four-tape set of my interviews with Constance Cumby. The Aquarian Conspiracy, the four CDs. We have my DVD, the talk she gave here about 2 years ago at the annual Radio Liberty Conference. It's called The Emergence. It's talking about the coming world leader. We certainly have got the DVDs on The Secret Mystery. These are very professionally done. The Secret Mystery of America's Beginning is one DVD. The second one is called Riddles in Stone, The Secret Architecture of Our Nation's Capital, where you'll see the demonic figures and the things having to do with astrology, the signs of the zodiac. In American buildings there in the Capitol, what are the signs of the zodiac doing there? That has to do with astrology. That's forbidden in the Bible. Or maybe it's there for another purpose. And then, of course, the third in the series is called The Eye of the Phoenix. It goes into the significance of the emblem on the back of the dollar bill. These are all three very important. Each one's about 2.5 hours. I do play a small part in each one. But what I have to say is really not as important as the overall message about the occult forces that work within our society. You can get all three together at a reduced a cost, or, of course, you can get them individually. We recommend you get them. You begin to understand what's going on, and then your job is to help us disseminate the truth while we still can. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, radioliberty.com. Remember our all-day conference on the 25th of October. Catherine Albrecht will be there, Dr. Albrecht. I said name Ashley Moat will be here, member of the European Parliament, Sydney. William Grigg will be here. Tom Horn will be here talking about the genetic engineering and animal-human hybrids and the spiritual significance of what's going on. Our webpage, radioliberty.com. You can listen to our internet there 9 hours a day and not get anything accomplished. Please pray for America. Pray for revival, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you once again for joining us here at the Power Hour. Always, of course, Joyce Riley is your host. Sitting in her her this morning will be Frosty Wooldridge from Denver, Colorado. And I'm just delighted. I hope you're delighted. And I tell you what, we're going to have a couple of hours that are going to be a lot of fun. Also, they're going to create a lot of discussion. And that's the key here. One of the great, great benefits of living in a republic stems from the fact that you, the American citizen, you, the citizen of this country, are really the guts and the gumption and everything that makes it work. And we're now finding that here in the 21st century, with all of the things that are not working,